This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A lot of listeners might agree that anything that reins in shock jocks like Howard Stern or Bubba the Love Sponge can't be an entirely bad thing. If you had a choice, you might decide not to see the wardrobe malfunction that bared Janet Jackson's breast during halftime at the Super Bowl or hit the mute button before Bono uttered the F-word in prime time. But to a growing number of those in the broadcast business, Howard, Janet, Bubba, and Bono are the new standard-bearers in the struggle for free speech. In recent months, the Federal Communications Commission has mounted an aggressive campaign to clean up the airwaves. Fines for infractions are much bigger than they used to be, and legislation before Congress could make them much bigger still. After Clear Channel got hit with almost $500,000 in fines, the company fired Bubba the Love Sponge and dropped the Howard Stern Show. CBS television affiliates said in a petition to the FCC that they might have to drop live news programs if the FCC doesn't lighten up. Radio and TV listeners, broadcasters, cable and satellite operators, advertisers, no one knows where the boundaries of acceptable and unacceptable are anymore. The prospect of huge fines has prompted some outlets to play it safe, and free speech advocates warn that the big chill is descending on American culture. Today on Talk of the Nation, we'll take a temperature on the American media. Are things really changing? If so, is that for the better or for the worse? And, of course, we want to hear from you. Do you notice a difference in what you see on TV or hear on the radio? Our number here in Washington, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. PBS and indecency are two words not often associated, but the FCC's hefty new fines are a cause for concern, even for respectable programs like the Antiques Roadshow on PBS. Rebecca Eaton joins us now. She's an executive producer of Masterpiece Theater and Mystery on PBS. She's at the studios of WGBH in Boston, and thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi, Neil.
The dilemma with the Antiques Roadshow, as I understand it, was a photograph of a nude Marilyn Monroe, which appeared on the program. After much debate, the show ended up leaving the image in. Masterpiece Theater has been more proactive to deal with the potentially offensive material. What have you decided to do?
Well, I think, first of all, we got to say, talking about Detective Jane Tennyson, and as played by Helen Mirren in Prime Suspect, in the same breath as the antics of the Super Bowl halftime show is a little bit of a head-snapper. Prime Suspect 6 is the one we aired this spring with Helen Mirren, and probably the best ever. And this ruling from the FCC came down just weeks before we were to go to air. And we had to make some changes in the show, which we did reluctantly. I think the point I'd like to make is that I'm a mother first, and an aunt, and a godmother, and I think there's a kind of a big mess out there in our culture. But the house cleaning that the FCC is proposing is being done with a pretty giant broom, and I think when it comes down to shows like Prime Suspect on Masterpiece Theater on PBS, that's an unintended consequence.
And the unintended consequence, if it should happen, if something went out, it wouldn't affect you necessarily. It would affect all of the affiliates that broadcast it.
Right. There's a little history to this, which is over the years. Masterpiece Theater is nearly 35 years old. And over the years, there's been lots of material that's come across our TV sets and our desks that we are considering for Masterpiece Theater, and we've been really, really careful about this. What we do is, first of all, to work with our co-producing partners in England to make sure this is absolutely appropriate to the material, whether it's language or graphic images. So we work really carefully with them in the first instance, because what we want to do is protect the integrity of the show as made. We don't want to be in the business of editing shows for our audience. So that's the first step. Sometimes the British can accept language or images that we can't. So we would periodically, rarely, offer two versions of a show, because this is such a big country. What might fly in a liberal Cambridge, Massachusetts, wouldn't fly in some part of the South here or another part of this country, which is more conservative. So we would leave it to the regents to choose. Okay, this time, because of the ruling, things were different, because were a station, were we to offer a version of this show and were a station to make the choice to air it, they could be slapped with a $500,000 fine, which would absolutely break the bank, and it could take these small license-holding stations under. And it is in PBS's interest to protect them, and we worked with PBS to try to prepare shows that they could air, because the other, you know, worst-case scenarios, they wouldn't air the show. Nobody would see anything. So the question is, you know, did it ruin the show? No. Did it, is the editing we did intrusive, troublesome? Yes. And we are sort of piggy in the middle here between trying to accommodate the FCC rulings, protect the stations, and we're now hearing from loyal viewers who are saying, wait a minute, don't edit my shows, let me decide if I want to watch. So I think this has all caused a tremendous climate of uncertainty.
From your vantage point, are the FCC's boundaries clear?
No, I think they're pretty open. Now, you know, you can make the argument that it's worse if they're so specific that you're down to, you know, every dotting every I and crossing every T in terms of what's obscene and what's too graphic. PBS is in discussion with the FCC to try to make the case for PBS and say, this is, you know, what we do as a network. We are the family network. We are the people we like to, you should be able to have your station, your TV tuned to PBS when the kids are in the room, trying to make clear to them what the consequences are for us.
Are other PBS programs, as far as you know, considering similar kinds of action?
Yeah, everybody's looking at everything they do really, really carefully because the legal and financial consequences are huge. I mean, maybe somebody should test this, you know, and, you know, put something on the air which challenges the FCC guidelines. However, I think that somebody might best be one of our richer brethren, one of the broadcast network who can afford these fines should it be ruled against them.
Mm-hmm. In the meantime, all you can do is continue to trim as best you can figure out what the FCC wants you to trim.
That's what we're doing. We do it reluctantly. We do it carefully. And I suspect a lot of this is going to calm down and maybe even blow over in the next 6 months to a year.
We shall see. Rebecca Eaton, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Neil.
Rebecca Eaton is executive producer of Masterpiece Theater and Mystery on PBS. She joined us from the studios at WGBH in Boston, Massachusetts. Well, joining us now is Frank Ahrens, business reporter who covers media and entertainment for The Washington Post. He's at the Washington Post New York Bureau. And thanks very much for being with us.
No worries, Neil. How are you?
Good. PBS is, as Ms. Eaton suggested, may be an unintended consequence of these new and heavier fines. Larger problem thus far, am I right, is radio?
Yes, radio has always been much more heavily fined. In fact, recently, maybe a few months ago, the FCC fined a television station in San Francisco, and as far as any of us could determine, it was only the second time that a television station had been fined for indecency in maybe three decades or so.
But fines for radio, Howard Stern used to be proud of such things.
Yeah, I mean, and the most recent ratings that came out after, well, I guess, maybe 2 weeks or so ago, Howard's ratings just shot through the roof thanks to all the controversy.
What has happened to him so far? We mentioned the Clear Channel. Six stations that carried his show were on Clear Channel. They dropped Howard Stern, but he's still on the air most everywhere else.
Right. That's a drop in the bucket for Howard's network. He's syndicated by Infinity, which is part of Viacom, which owns CBS. And he has a weekly audience of, I don't know, upwards 5-6 million, something like that. He's not as big as Rush Limbaugh, but he's pretty big. And so Clear Channel, it was sort of an easy drop for them. He wasn't in huge markets for them, and they have had a checkered past with, as you mentioned, Bubba the Love Sponge and some of their other more profane acts. And they just said, well, we're not going to, you know, we're just going to do a preventative strike and cut Howard off. But it's not like they took him off, you know, their top revenue-generating markets where he was.
So what else do you see that is actually evidence for the much-vaunted chilling effect?
Well, I think the much-vaunted chilling effect is kind of much overhyped chilling effect. One thing that we need to remember The FCC does not go out and police the airwaves. The FCC responds to listener and viewer complaints. So therefore, it's up to broadcasters to really know their audience, to know the community standards that they're broadcasting to, whether it's a PBS audience, whether it's a morning drive shock jock audience. It's a self-selecting community in many ways. But what happens is somebody may be flipping around the dial on their way from NPR to the light music station, and they run across Howard or somebody else, and they're offended by it, and they make a complaint to the FCC, and then the FCC goes and investigates it. And typically you need transcripts, tapes, things like that. So the FCC isn't out there big brothering, if that's a verb, the airwaves. They're waiting for complaints, and then they act.
Is there any evidence to indicate that the level of complaints has gone up?
Oh, heck yes. There's been a number of, I did a piece a few months ago, there's a very active group, the Parents Television Council, which is led by Brent Bozell, and it's probably fairly described as a social conservative group, but they've gotten very active in grassroots activation. They've got about at least 75,000 members. And I wish I could remember the numbers, but it was a factor of 10. The FCC said that in, I think, 2000, they got maybe, let's say, 200 complaints on TV shows. And then last year, they got maybe a factor of 10, maybe 2,000 complaints more. So people are watching more. They're becoming empowered more. And it's unfair to say that, oh, this is just one group, because those are 75,000 actual people.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-989-8255. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We're speaking with Frank Ahrens of The Washington Post, and joining us now on the phone is Yu Tan, who's with us from Ithaca, New York.
Hi.
Hi.
Excellent topic. I think one of the things that needs to be discussed in all of this, and this is not a particularly original idea of mine, is the way obscenity gets defined. And so, you know, and so something like an ad for Viagra, for example, which relatively explicitly discusses things of a sexual nature,
mm-hmm.
Is allowed, whereas certain other things then are not. Or violence, for example, which certainly can be seen as a form of obscenity or something we might want to, in the public interest, protect our children from, seems to be a big argument for keeping all sorts of things off the air. All sorts of explicit violence on, for example, shows like Cops,
mm-hmm.
doesn't appear to be falling under this ruling.
And the question being, and it was one that the FCC commissioner addressed in the short clip of tape we had at the top of the show, is it the government's job, the FCC's job, to say you can say this, you can't say that?
Right. Well, and I mean, obviously these are culturally defined. The meaning of the word is culturally defined, and it's just interesting, I think, where those lines seem to get drawn or where people fear those lines will be drawn.
Well, Frank Ahrens, again, at the moment, it's a little unclear where those lines are drawn. They're pretty blurry right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's and I think you can fairly argue that broadcasters want them constitutionally pretty blurry. What it comes down to, the basic thing that we're dealing with on the FCC's definition of indecency is something that describes scatological or sexual activities and is in the prurient interest. So, for instance, the big flap last year was over Bono on the award show when he won an award and he said, "This is effing brilliant." And the FCC originally ruled that it was not indecent because it was not scatological or it was not sexual. It was essentially used as an adjective.
Insert uproar.
Right, absolutely. And then, of course, the FCC looks silly for doing that. Michael Powell comes in and says, okay, it's not, the FCC's not saying it's okay to say that. And so then the commission reverses its enforcement division's ruling and said that that's off limits and essentially created a list of one word saying you're going to get slapped with an indecency fine if you say this word.
Yutan, thanks very much for the call. We'll be back with more on this question after a short break. Our telephone number again, 800-989-8255, totn@npr.org. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the confusion for broadcasters, listeners, viewers, and advertisers about what's obscene and indecent and what's not. now that the penalties are higher, and some say that American culture is beginning to become even more puritanical and self-censoring. By the way, we should point out that we have for months now invited FCC Commissioner Michael Powell to join us to discuss these and other issues. He has repeatedly declined. Our guest is Frank Ahrens, Washington Post business reporter who covers media and entertainment. And joining us now is Bob Lee, chairman of the CBS Television Network Affiliates Association. He's also president and general manager of WDBJ, the CBS affiliate in Roanoke, Virginia. He joins us now from his office in Roanoke. And good of you to be with us on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
As chairman of the association, what are you hearing from your affiliates about their concerns over the FCC's new fines?
Well, I want to go back to something Rebecca Eaton said a few minutes ago and perhaps take issue with it when she indicated she thought this would likely blow over. I'm not so sure it will. There is a substantial segment of the population in this country that has just become has reached its limit with what it will tolerate on over-the-air radio and television.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those people have put some heat on their members of Congress, and Congress has in turn passed the heat on to Chairman Powell. So I'm not so sure this thing's going to blow over. As to your question as to what we're hearing from affiliates around the country, we're sympathetic to the feeling of the traditional CBS audience that things have gone a little far, and it seems to me the Super Bowl incident was just sort of the frosting on the cake that brought the discussion from the perhaps the center burner up to the front burner.
Mm-hmm.
And needless to say, we're eager to see how this is going to work itself out.
The big concern, one of the concerns, at least as far as I understand it, is live broadcasting, including live news events.
Yes, there was one proposal put forward in Congress to have a three strikes you're out interpretation of indecency complaints. And it terrifies us somewhat that the...
In other words, if one station were cited three times, they would lose their license.
Exactly. And the case one of our affiliates postulated was this. Suppose we have a crew out covering live breaking events at a flood or whatever, and some guy decides to run through the scene nude, carrying a sign with obscenity on it. There's two of our three strikes in one fell swoop.
That happens all the time.
Yeah.
And I understand a station in Phoenix, Arizona, curtailed its live coverage of a news broadcast earlier this month for fear that somebody might say something that would offend their viewers.
I think there was a little more involved than that. As I understand it, they were broadcasting a memorial service. And deep into the program, a member of the...
Memorial service for Pat Tillman, the former NFL player killed in Afghanistan.
Exactly. And deep into the broadcast, deep into the service, a member of the family came to the podium to speak and included obscenities in his comments. And the station just felt it couldn't risk the exposure to an obscenity complaint, so it pulled out of the coverage.
Obscenities in sort of locker room language, if
yeah.
you would? Yeah. Okay. Let's get another caller on the line, and Jason is with us from Willingboro, New Jersey.
Hi, how y'all doing today?
All right.
Okay, good. Outstanding subject. I'm glad y'all are addressing this. As a father of two, I've noticed that the media has just continuously gotten worse, materialistic, all sorts of sex all over the place, even violence. You know, I was watching Fox News last night, and they were talking about coverage in Texas. Pakistan, and they showed what it was, a 13-year-old or another teenage boy dead in open body bags, which I thought was a little extreme. We got the point just by them telling us. They didn't have to show it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting, too. I'd heard that the comment you had made about American society becoming more puritanical. I don't think it becoming more puritanical. I think we're the same. It's just that media is trying to, I don't know, overreach its own boundaries. And a lot of a lot of the American culture is finally saying enough's enough.
Well, let me follow up, because that's a point that we hear a lot. Bob Lee, as a chairman now of the CBS TV affiliate groups, one of the things we hear from broadcasters a lot is, hey, those guys on cable are a lot more racy. If we don't keep up from them, we're going to lose our audience.
Well, you might hear that from the Hollywood community, but I don't think you hear it from the heartland.
And do you think that's true? I mean, do you think that that's what's one of the things that's driving some of the broadcasting on network television?
There's always that possibility, Neil, but I'm not certain that's the case. Mr. Allen's made a good point. If you hit your seek and scan button on the car radio, you never know what you're going to run into moving from one station to another.
Mm-hmm.
And likewise, there's some confusion among television viewers as to what they're watching. Is this over-the-air regulated broadcast television, or is this a cable channel?
Right.
So one of the challenges, I think, in this regulatory debate is going to be to try and figure out how you can set one set of standards for regulated over-the-air broadcasters without some at least parallel set of standards for the unregulated cable channels.
We'll be discussing that with a representative from the cable industry in just a minute. Jason, I wanted to ask you, do you think there should be more government control?
I think there should be more black and white guidelines. I don't know like what the networks themselves have, but I mean if they've actually had like this is specifically what you can and cannot do.
And you, from what you're saying, might want to include violence as well as inappropriate language or graphic images.
Roger that. I mean, especially on like the non-cable networks where families are watching. I mean, personally, I'm a father of two boys. I was really irritated at the Super Bowl with that, with Janet Jackson. And I don't care what anybody else says about it. It wasn't that bad. It was only half a second. I don't want my children exposed to that. And I get really irritated listening to people say, well, you can't, it's freedom of speech, freedom of speech. Well, all right, your freedoms are impinging on my comfort level.
Well, Bob Lee, CBS and other officials of the Viacom company complained, apologized profusely for that incident and said it would never happen again. But is that one of the things that's making affiliates feel more vulnerable?
I think that was a sensitizing moment. We've heard a lot of talk through the years about synergy and the opportunities offered under this broad Viacom ownership. And I think this crystallized things for us a bit. There's a certain expectation for what people expect when they tune in for a program on CBS, or for that matter NBC or ABC, and maybe even for Fox, and a whole different expectation for what they'll see if they tune into MTV. So I really wonder in the Super Bowl broadcast how many people who are regular viewers of MTV were made uncomfortable at all by Nelly's acrobatics and
the rap singer who was on just before Janet Jackson.
Yeah, we had as much mail on the crotch-grabbing aspect of that broadcast as we did on the Janet Jackson incident itself.
Mm, yeah. Bob Lee, thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Neil.
Bob Lee, chairman of the CBS Television Network Affiliates Association, also president and general manager of WDBJ, the CBS affiliate in Roanoke, Virginia, and he joined us from his office in Roanoke. And Jason, by the way, thanks very much to you, too. Appreciate the phone call.
Thank you very much. Keep up the outstanding program.
Oh, we'll try our best. Thank you. Frank Ahrens, there has been talk in years past. There was something on broadcasters called the Code of Good Conduct, or the National Association of Broadcasters, the television networks, you know, agreeing on sort of a self-censorship regime along the lines of the old Hayes Office in the movies or the comics code. Is this something that they are trying to bring back, or in some sense do you think that the FCC is trying to subtly nudge them to bring back?
I don't think there's anything subtle about what the FCC is doing. Michael Powell had requested, and he's gotten from Congress, and it will most likely be signed by the president, the ability to increase the fines they can impose by tenfold, from $27,500 up to $275,000. And the FCC has now shown that it's going to start fining for each incident of indecency. So, for instance, if you said something bad 10 times in a show, you used to just get one fine. Now you're going to get 10 fines.
And if it's on 10 stations, that's 10 fines times 10 stations.
And so forth, exactly. And yes, absolutely, the National Association of Broadcasters and others will do anything to head off further regulation and potentially back-breaking fines. In terms of, we were just bringing up earlier about the whole difference between cable and broadcast. I'm here in New York covering the what's called the annual upfronts, when the networks roll out their fall programming to advertisers and try to sell all the commercial time in them. Well, I was at ABC's yesterday showing the fall lineup, and I noticed a lot of partial, dorsal, inside nudity. Now, some of the pilot material doesn't make it to broadcast, but this is the way they're pushing. And this is ABC, which is owned by Disney, which always tries to be family friendly. In fact, one was a fully nude brief dorsal female corpse, and people were joking, "Well, okay, if it's a corpse, it's a crop, it's a prop, it's not a real person."
Mm-hmm.
But that's what's happening. And I was talking to NBC executives the day before, saying it's an unfair, it's an unlevel playing field. If Sopranos can show what it does, and even shows like Nip Tuck on FX can have R-rated language because it comes on cable and it's late at night, we can't compete.
Well, Brian Dietz is here in Studio 3A. He's the spokesperson for National Cable and Telecommunications Association here, shaking his head at what Frank Ahrens just said. If there's going to be regulation on broadcasters, why shouldn't there be regulations on cable as well?
Well, I think it's important to realize that there are some fundamental differences between broadcasting and cable. And the U.S. Supreme Court, even as recently as the year 2000, has made a ruling in regards to the differences between broadcast and cable in terms of regulation of content. And if you look at broadcasting, whether it's radio or TV, that is free, unfiltered, over the air. Broadcasters have been given this spectrum that's worth billions of dollars, mm-hmm. so they can broadcast as programming in return for meeting some public service obligations. Cable has built out private networks using private capital and are delivering a subscription service that is only available to customers who pay a monthly bill, and only customers who receive that service do have the opportunity to watch cable or satellite service. So I think it's unfair to say that just because it's on TV, it should be regulated, because there is some substantial differences between broadcasting and cable.
So the use of the public airwaves is what you say gives the government the ability to control, or the right to control to some degree what broadcasters do. Obviously, cable operators don't use that spectrum.
Absolutely. Broadcasters have been given public spectrum worth billions of dollars in order to deliver their programming to basically every American home, and they take advantage of it, and it's a great business for them. Cable has built private networks, and it's a subscription service. Another important distinction is that cable does provide technology so that consumers can block out unwanted channels or content from coming into their home. So in the Supreme Court case in the year 2000, the Supreme Court did find that the difference between cable and broadcast in terms of regulatory treatment of content is that cable can block unwanted channels on a household-by-household basis. So that's important. So if people do find content that they're not comfortable with, cable companies do have the ability to block that out.
Frank Ahrens, is there any discussion in the various bills before Congress now of including cable and presumably satellite broadcasters in underneath the FCC's purview?
What's happening, and Brian is correct in the letter of the law. However, the spirit of the law argues something different, which is cable and satellite are essentially ubiquitous now. About 85% of America gets either the TV from either cable or satellite. And if you were to take a poll of viewers, can you tell me the difference between the over-the-air channels you get or the cable channels you get? Probably most would not differentiate. And what most don't know is that if they're lucky in big cities, of the 150 or so channels they get, only seven or eight are regulated by the FCC for content because of those public interest requirements that Brian refers to. That's correct. However, as I said, the spirit of the law is blowing things up, and Congress is getting heat for this. And it's unlikely that Congress would extend the FCC's or try to extend the FCC's authority over cable, because they would face some serious and, I think, correct constitutional hurdles. However, there is a bit of a push on the Hill and from advocacy groups for something that we're calling, that's being called a la carte, which is to say people would only pay for the channels they want. And Brian is correct saying that cable channels and satellite channels can be blocked, but people argue on the other side, well, why should I still have to pay for them? So why am I paying for content that I may find offensive? So a number of congressmen recently asked the FCC to, I just wrote a story about it for tomorrow's paper, to study the efficacy of
a la carte.
Of a la carte.
Yeah.
And obviously the cable industry wants to do, and satellite industry wants to do anything it can to avoid potentially crippling regulation. But that's the motion on the Hill now.
We're talking with Frank Ahrens of the Washington Post and with Brian Dietz of the National Cable and Telecommunications Association. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Brian Dietz, a la carte?
A la carte is not a good idea for consumers or for cable networks. If you look at what will happen as a result of a government mandate to require a la carte programming, the end result is that consumers will pay more to get less channels.
Okay, let's get another listener involved. And Sean is with us from Seneca Falls, New York.
Hi. Neil, Neil, thanks for taking my call. Was it Ben Franklin that said those who will trade freedom for security will lose both and deserve neither?
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed an undercurrent in the enforcement on or the crackdown. Most of the people that are coming, excepting like the NFL, most of the people that are coming under this are also people that have been unfriendly to the Bush regime.
And
as in Howard Stern, he got away with all kinds of things in 2001, but he turned against. He started saying things against Bush, and all of a sudden, boom, he's in hot water.
Frank Aaron, so which came first, Howard Stern's diatribes against the Bush administration or the fines?
I'm glad you gave me an opportunity to disabuse this conspiracy theory. This crackdown on indecency is completely bipartisan, and if not, that has been led strongly by the Democrats on the Federal Communications Commission, chiefly Michael Copps, who has been working with Brent Bozell for a long time at the Parents Television Council. This is coming a lot from the left. It is bipartisan, but a lot from the left. And Michael Powell has been criticized as being a tool of the White House, his father, obviously, Colin Powell. Well, if he's such a tool, why did they just slap $500,000 fine on Clear Channel, the owners of which and some of the chief shareholders are very, very close to the Bush family from Texas? This is not and further, the whole idea of payback against Howard Stern and anyone else, the duration that it takes from the time a complaint is received at the FCC to the time a ruling is made and endorsed by, and after negotiation with the offending party and endorsed by the full commission, is a period of several months, if not more than a year, which makes political payback essentially impossible.
Brian Dietz, before we let you go, are there guidelines in cable, or are you planning guidelines?
Well, the cable industry prefers to address this through a voluntary consumer education campaign we've labeled Cable Puts You in Control to help educate parents and families about making responsible viewing decisions. We have initiated a website, which is www.controlyourtv.org, which provides information about the choice that cable provides. It provides a variety of channels for families and children, about the controls that cable provides so families can block unwanted content from coming into their home, and also about education and media literacy. We have the cable industry has a group called Cable in the Classroom that works with the PTA on media literacy and other programs, so we can all work together to educate families about making responsible viewing decisions.
Thanks very much for coming in to see us.
Thank you, Neil.
Brian Dietz, spokesperson for the National Cable and Telecommunications Association, joined us here in Studio 3A. We're going to continue this conversation after a short break, plus what today's court-martial in Baghdad tells us about Abu Ghraib jailers and higher-ups. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, after two raucous weeks, the political picture in India is becoming clearer. The new prime minister has been selected, and the stock market has settled down. The after effects of a surprise election result and what it means to India's future tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Today we're talking about FCC actions recently, how they're affecting broadcasters, and whether you notice a chilling effect. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also email us, TOTN@NPR.org. Our guest is Frank Ahrens, a Washington Post business reporter who covers media and entertainment. Ultimately, this comes down to the bottom line for many people. For broadcasters and media, that means advertisers. Greg Lindsay is a contributor to Advertising Age magazine. He co-wrote the article, The New Puritanism, that appeared in the April 5th issue of Advertising Age. He says the latest crackdown by the FCC is splitting viewers into two camps and forcing advertisers to think more carefully about where they put their money and how. And he joins us now from his home in Brooklyn, New York. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So you say there's been a lot of cyclical swings of the pendulum about obscenity and indecency on the air, but what this effect of this one might be, you say, is the end of the mainstream. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think this is the first sort of cyclical burst of outrage that we've seen in sort of the fragmented media landscape that we have now. And I think what we're seeing is, with so many options in front of consumers, younger, sophisticated consumers who are looking for edgy content will seek it out. They will not be content to stay in broadcast when they can go look online, they can go look in cable, they can even go, I mean, several advertising executives think that pay-per-view will begin to carry advertising in an effort to sort of reach and appeal to these consumers who are looking for edgier fare.
So the same kind of advertisers who buy space in Playboy magazine might buy space on the Playboy channel.
Exactly. Liquor advertisers, advertisers of more adult-themed subjects, and by that I don't even mean sort of outrageous things. I just mean sort of products that are looking for an older, sophisticated audience. And if they can't find it in broadcast because of FCC regulations, they'll simply go where those consumers are looking.
And if it's younger, sophisticated broadcasters, they might go to MTV or one of those kinds of stations.
Or they might go online. I think we're seeing the return of online advertising at the same time as sort of this FCC imbroglio is happening, and I think marketers will particularly look online for younger consumers.
So what kind of dilemma does this create for advertisers?
Well, this sort of forces them in a position where they're going to have to either choose between one or the other. You can either choose to appeal to a mainstream, which is very concerned about content, or you can chase sort of a younger, edgier consumer, or you simply create two parallel campaigns with creative that's aimed at both of them, and then you sort of hope that, you know, the two never meet and realize what you're doing.
That the moral minority, as you describe it, would never happen upon the edgier commercial somewhere else.
Exactly. You sort of hope that there's a walled garden, that, you know, that this schism between the two will continue to be so, and so therefore you can sort of coexist by sending two different messages tailored to each group.
So that the world which we've been entering for a long time, where it's been a decade since mom and dad and the kids gathered around the tube and watched through the evening on one of four networks, that this fragmented world is going to become even more fragmented.
Yes, this could be sort of another push to, you know, or perhaps the final push to sort of create this multi fragmented world where there is no sort of common audience. I mean, I think, you know, obviously Viacom learned the hard way what happens when they tried to sort of append a niche brand, a major niche brand like MTV, onto the largest mainstream audience in the world. And there was rejection. There was a culture clash. And I think this is sort of a proof to advertisers and to media executives that, you know, these culture clashes are real and that you can't combine them or arbitrarily sort of force them together based on what your media conglomerate happens to own.
We have an email that goes to this point from Cheryl Casson. What I notice recently about my television viewing habits is that I'm watching PBS and cable stations, particularly HBO and Showtime, more than the broadcast commercial networks because the former are more willing to take bolder approaches and take more risks.
Absolutely. I mean, the also thing to consider in this is that for younger viewers, I mean, perhaps under the age of 25 and certainly under the age of 18, there's no distinction between cable and broadcast. We remember this because we remember cable coming into its own. If you're young enough, there simply are channels. There is no sort of distinction, and so therefore it's sort of a moot point. Every cable channel is equal to broadcast.
And all of the, you say this is obviously affecting TV and radio, and one of the things it could do is spur a migration to some now relatively marginal media like satellite radio and pay-per-view TV.
Absolutely. Satellite radio sort of be the interesting thing as the Howard Stern situation continues to play out, whether this sort of schism can sort of lead to the rise of new forms of media that are sort of protected behind subscription walls or sort of protected away from government regulation. And the fear of those emerging media is that government regulation will follow them if they begin to sort of become a safe harbor for edgier content like Stern.
Greg Lindsay, thank you.
Thank you.
Greg Lindsay, a contributor to Advertising Age. He co-wrote the article, The New Puritanism, that appeared in the April 5th issue of the magazine, and he joined us from his home in Brooklyn, New York. Frank Ahrens is still with us, and let's see if we can get another caller in. And let's go to Michael, who's with us from Washington, D.C.
Hi, Neil. This is a great show.
Thank you.
I do think it could have been a little better, though.
Of course.
If you'd have asked Sandra Singh Lowe to be on the program today, she might have had quite a bit to say about this.
Sandra Singh Lowe, I should say, for those not familiar with her incident, she's been a broadcaster on NPR and many other outlets as well, was fired from KCRW, the NPR member station in Santa Monica, California, after a commentary aired that included the F word twice. She had wanted it to be edited out. A mistake was made. It was aired anyway, and the brouhaha ensued.
And she was also, subsequently, the management offered her a job back, which she declined, which I understand completely.
Mm-hmm.
But as I got into the incident with management emailing to protest her firing and so on, one of the things that management sent back was an email that said, look, we have to be really careful. There's a chilling effect out here. The FCC could levy huge fines against us. So we have to protect ourselves.
The management of KCRW, yes.
Correct. And I guess the concern that I have is there's been any number of shows on NPR recently, Morning Edition, this one, so on and so forth, that have completely skipped over this incident that occurred in the NPR family. And I just want to know why.
I think it's
a perfect example of how some really good things are being edited, censored, overlooked, stepped aside, you know, cautionary, because of this chilling effect that's coming from the FCC.
Sometimes, Michael, it's a fair point, but sometimes we fear that airing our own internal issues sounds like a little bit of self-obsession. Frank Ahrens, though, Michael's greater point about the need or the feeling among many stations, no matter where they are, including public stations, a feeling vulnerable about this. Is that a measurable chilling effect?
Empirically, I don't know. We've seen some anecdotal evidence. For instance, a TV show on one of the networks earlier this year, I even forget which one, was going to deleted out a scene that showed a partial breast, I believe. It had been like a medical show.
I think it was the ER.
Yeah, that's correct. So, yeah, probably. I mean, as the CBS station manager told us earlier, this is not going to blow over. I mean, not with significant fines. I mean, this is an issue that will be... will be around for some time, and I do like the point that was made earlier about alternative forms of media like a satellite radio. When satellite radio signed on, 2 years ago, it had a very small subscriber base, but now XM, the larger of the two, is pushing 2 million for a national audience, and that becomes a pretty significant wallop that might be able to lure somebody like Howard Stern away from Infinity when his contract expires and says, well, if I've reach 5 million people a week now, I'll reach 2 million and maybe 3 million or so in a year as this service continues, and I can say anything I want.
Until such time as regulations reach out to these outlets as well.
Quite possibly. And in fact, I've been at hearings on the Hill in the past couple of months where at least one radio station owner called for a similar enforcement capacity over satellite radio because of what he's facing terms of competition.
Michael, thanks very much for the call, and thank you for reminding us that sometimes we need to overcome our own inhibitions about covering ourselves. I guess Michael has left us, but thanks to him anyway. And Frank Ahrens, as always, thanks to you too.
Thanks a lot, Neil. It was fun.
Frank Ahrens is the media reporter for the Washington Post, also a business reporter up in New York covering the upfront sessions as the networks announced their fall schedules, and he joined us from the Washington Post Bureau there. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.